Hello everyone, thank you so much for tuning in to Talking BizTech. I'm your host Sakif, and today we are going to explore building wealth in real estate. But before we do that, I just want to thank the commercial finance brokerage in Chula Vista, California, called Zena Financial. Zena Financial relies heavily on equipment financing. Zena Financial also consults and educate as well as provide customer service to their clients who are seeking funding for their business. And if you are looking to fund your business or if you're seeking for funding, then the application form is down in the description box. Make sure to check them out. And yeah, now back to the topic. So everybody wants to know how real estate investment can be profitable. So real estate investors have a lot of other options when it comes to choosing investments, and they're not all physical properties. It can help you to increase wealth in the long run. Real estate can enhance the risk and return profile of an investor's portfolio, and as well as offering competitive risk-adjusted returns. In general, real estate market is one of low volatility, especially compared to equities and bonds. However, real estate is also attractive when compared with more traditional source of return, income return. The most common way real estate offers a profit, and investors can make profit from increasing property value. This is achieved in different ways and different types of properties, but it is realized through one way and selling. So we will get to know more about how real estate investment can help us to build the wealth in the long run. So my guest for today's episode is Blair Collin, who is a real estate agent and also an entrepreneur. So let me just go ahead and bring him on Talking BizTech. Hi, Blair. How are you, sir?
Good. And yourself, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for asking, sir.
Good to see you today.
Yeah, and it's great to see you as well, sir. And Blair, before we dive into the real estate investment, I just want to get to know you a little better. Can you tell me about yourself and your educational background?
Sure. I have a degree in business from the University of Washington. I concentrated not only in business, but also in environmental studies because I wanted to go into environmental work at the time. Because I thought it was something that was going to be a growing sector, which it was. After being in the work sector for a while, I did go out and work in regulatory compliance. I kept coming back to real estate because it was one of those things that I just loved to do, was inspired by, and I thought that it would make a lot of sense. So I'll tell you a little bit about my background in real estate. But after being in real estate for a while, I also got a degree in construction management because I wanted to know the nuts and bolts of how I could spend money that you make in real estate and shift the way my portfolio was to things that I own, mixed use buildings, more multifamilies at the time, and also just understand how to bring people on board, use contracts, read surveys, put together the maps and the costing associated with construction management. It's still something that in my toolbox that I rely on and I want to use some more. Hopefully, given what I'm working on right now.
Wow, that is amazing, sir. And thank you so much for sharing your educational background. I respect that you have a business background. And sir, you are working on different projects. I want to know, like, what does a typical day look like for Blair Collins?
These days, you know, it's a great question. I would love to tell you that I'm making a lot of money in my startup. The bad news is I have not been able to get my hands on the tech. So it was interesting listening to you in the start, in the introduction, because the business interface between real estate and technology, I think, has a potential to explode. It's already doing it a little bit with Airbnb, you know, and VRBOs, you know, and different ways that people are using property management tools, as well as CRMs to contact people.
That's true.
I've been focusing on creating a way to hold people accountable, because I think it's at the nuts and bolts of the manageability of relationships, candidly. And so, the tech side is exploding. It's also one of those things where if you read a lot of investment books, you'll start to see some repeated themes. And one of those things is there's certain basics you have to do, which is make more money and save a bunch of it as much as you can. Set that money aside and get it working for you. But then do things that are replicatable over space and time. Okay. Oh, yes. Now, one of the things that's nice about real estate, which we can talk about, is that once you have acquired an asset and you get it paying so that it has positive cash flow, that cash flow is typically replicatable over time. Okay. It's fixed. Okay. To the asset that you own. Okay. But it is a replicatable and transferable way of basically carrying wealth forward that is very, very attractive. Okay. Software is also very similar, that you can actually distribute it and replicate the way you make money or the way you do your business in a repeatable fashion, which is no different than, say, franchising and other ways to make money, which they basically take a model and they give it to you, they teach it to you. And when you do it over time, it makes money. That's consistent. Now, if you can do it in real estate and then combine this, the ability to spread contacts, leads, you know, actions over the internet, then that gives you the ability to look at and see how assets are doing across different sectors. Okay. So that's why I've been trying to combine real estate and technology, because, man, never before has there been the ability to do a certain amount of work, create something of value for people, and have it grow as quickly or as far as technology can with the computers right now. So I'm still very interested in it. So a typical day for me right now is I've been making money. I have a regular job at Amazon. I'm still working on my startup, but, you know, I'm making some money the old-fashioned way, because one of the things people do or don't talk about much when they talk about being an entrepreneur is the ebb and flow of cash flow versus cash spurts. And since it's self-funded, honestly, I'm the grind right now. So I have a job, and then I am working on my vision for my startup. So,
wow, that is very interesting. And it's good initiative that you're combining real estate with technology. I believe that technology is making lead generation a little bit easier than before. I'm very curious to know, how did you get into the entrepreneurship journey?
Like I said before, with my degree, I've always had a vision for where I think things are going. I also have had a vision when I got into the environmental work. I saw it growing. There were a lot of new regulations at the time that were being implemented. Mm-hmm. And I saw that the impacts that we could have needed to be addressed. And so I've always had a vision for the future. And then I put my actions where I think it can have the most benefit for me, because I have to feel good about the work I do. One of the wrestling matches I have right now in technology is a lot of things are very centrally controlled. The way the software works is that it has to be told exactly what you want it to do. Unfortunately for me, I'm trying to figure out how to make it more flexible, because once you get deeper into technology, you'll find out that even at the coding and the computer language basis, they have to, what they do is program in what they call fuzzy logic. Like, I used to work for a printers manufacturer when I was doing environmental work, Tektronix, down in Oregon, in Portland. And I was talking to some of the hardware engineers over there and the software engineers, and they said that even though you send a signal to print a page, the computer doesn't always get that signal. So we have to send two signals to get the page, right? And then we drop one of them. And there are lots of ways with a lot of the way the computers work is you have to be able to overcompensate for what it doesn't get right. It doesn't do everything exactly right. It won't always get the signals. So there are some people playing with tech right now where we can actually take advantage of that reality of not just computer programming, but the way people function. Okay. And, you know, that's something that I'm very interested in doing, is trying to get, what are you going to do? When are you going to do it? Who are you going to tell, and how? And can you send that to somebody in a summary that then allows you to plot that in a way that shows up on your computer? Like, through, I'd love to use Google as a platform because the mapping is excellent. The geofencing potential is really good there. And so it's the calendar and the email and all that. Unfortunately for me, and for, I feel, for the market, they change their APIs on a regular basis so that you can't use their platform as a sub platform. So right now I've had to pull back. That's one reason why I've gotten work, is I hired three different people to try and take a run at connecting the APIs of Google to a simple widget that would summarize what are you going to do, when are you going to do it, who are you going to tell, and how, and do it so that I could send it to somebody. That's what I'm trying to get at. If I could do that in real estate and then connect it, I have a patent for my business is called Sober Screen and Sober Stepper. And Sober Screen is a process for using software to connect your actions as a client to the real estate, which is, if you're clean and sober, come and go into the property. So connecting the door locks to a breathalyzer and a saliva-based test so that you prove your sobriety on a regular basis. Now, is that market going to be something that's going to be a huge market for everybody and help everybody? No, but it would help me as the owner of the property provide a safe, clean and sober environment for people that are early in recovery and trying to develop habits that help them over time. So if I could combine a software play that allows me to connect to other people that would help somebody in recovery, like a coach, a dietitian, an exercise person, you know, a meditation, you know, their sponsor, things like that. And they could track, what are you going to do? When are you going to do it? Who are you going to tell, and how? And we could do that in a consistent, simple format that uses the power of the tools of geofencing, you know, your calendar, your communications with email or text or phone, right? Or video in this case, you know, something that summarizes that little simple, what you're going to do. I have, a widget design that is just simple to swipe it and send it, but I have to connect it to a very complex infrastructure. And right now I have not been able to do that elegantly, but if you can do that and combine it with real estate, you could hold people accountable for things like, are you sober in my environment? Or did you take out the trash with your roommates? Things like very simple manageability things I think people could use it for. If it's relatively cheap, easy to use, and if not cheap, free would be great. But I'd like it to be cheap so it's not advertising based. It's just, did you do it? You pay a certain amount to be held accountable by the person in your circle. And if you can do that, it can replicate, and word of mouth gets it that it's a useful tool for people. It can go out there and actually really help people and then connect it to the real estate with the door locks, the breathalyzers, things like that. I could do sober living spaces. I have a patent for that. I also would like to apply it to things like elder care or dormitories, you know, or places where people live, not in single family units, you know, but as people with an objective. They live in that space. They pay their bills for their space, which is, in my model, would be for their room, right? And then they do certain things to be part of that community. And it's tracked. If I could do that well and do it elegantly and connect it to other businesses, I could create a network of support for people that are able to specialize in what they do best. And then I would concentrate on this, and I would love to concentrate on travel, because the original idea happened because I was doing a lot of traveling and going to hostels. And I found that I was consistently getting an introduction to the place, a map. These are our hours, and then you'd come and go. As long as you did the certain things and followed the rules, they'd rent you a bunk or a bedroom for not much money, a lot cheaper than renting a hotel and things like that. I think technology could give us the way to not only service a very important niche market, which is the recovery market. But if we could get started there, we could grow it to other markets where people are doing certain things to be in that space. And when they do it and they check it off and they've got proof of work, be it in mind testing, or you take a picture of the work and then it's geofenced so you know that it was done or whatever. If we could do that so we can check off on a spreadsheet, like for instance, forms and spreadsheets are also part of our daily use tools, but we don't have a way of saying, check, it got done, right? And you send a note of it to the person that they wanted, that agreed to be, hold you accountable to that. There's money to be made in that space, as well as providing the environment that is wired around this. And I think that it can make a lot of money and help a lot of people. So that's what I'm working on. Unfortunately for me, it's a very complex vision. And it's been more difficult building it than I wish it had taken. But that's just, it's something I'm very, very serious about getting delivered. So that's what I'm working on.
Hey, it is a complex vision. I agree. And it has a lot of work. But I hope that technology can help you expand your market rather than focus on the niche market. And sir, I have a very important question. And this is what the podcast is about. Tell me about the power of investment in real estate and how it is going to create wealth in the long run.
I have been a licensed agent since 2002. You know, I've seen the market actually come in and go out, you know, with a bit of the bubble of 2008. I was looking at the numbers today again before our meeting, and in 2000, right before the Great Depression, the market took a strong dip, you know, and I had read a book before that said the returns on rentals was about 1 to 3%, you know, back in the Depression. But looking at just the value, the purchase price, it actually dipped like 62 to 56% during the Depression. So right now, given the numbers, and this is one of the, I'm just being very candid with you, that one of the hesitations about talking on a podcast is trying to be how I think you can make it long term. I think people need to be very careful about what they buy and where right now, because the affordability is outstripping, in my opinion, the return you get or the value that you're getting at your first cost. Now, in making money in real estate, there's an old saying, which is you make your money on the buy, which is you buy it right. You net your money on the sale. Now, from an investor standpoint, I always bought my properties distressed. Okay. I jokingly tell people that if the more times I go to the dump, the happier I am, because that means I'm breaking stuff and fixing them, right? And if I bought it at the right price, I'll generally get that forced appreciation. Now, forced appreciation with improved cash flow, right, is something that I've relied on in the past. And honestly, I think there's still a great play there right now, because in the current market, if it continues, your exit strategy is paid for by somebody else who's going to just write a check for a house that looks pretty. Okay. That said, during the Depression, they took 56 to 62% decrease in the value of property from the roaring 20s down into the market. Okay. Wow. I would be remiss if I didn't tell you one of the reasons why I'm not an active agent right now, even though I'm licensed, I'm not selling a lot, is I have concerns about the market because people are doing a lot of emotional buying. It was a one-off that I used to do accelerator clauses, you know, in the early O's, you know, but I do it to win the bid because I didn't want to deal with not, you know, getting the deal. So I'd say, look, how much are you willing to pay for up to a price? Like, that's your choice. Now, put that on the piece of paper. If you would pay more and you don't want to be, you know, disappointed if you don't get it, put that price down there. Now, if the price is lower than that, right, then we can put in an accelerator clause up to that number. But always put a number that you don't regret not getting the property at.
Yeah.
So that accelerator clause gives you kind of a range to work with. And then if somebody takes the highest number you give them, you know you put your best foot forward. I've done it before, and I think it's a great way to go because you give yourself a range. You come in and you say, I am serious about buying this property. You put in good earnest money, you put in good down payment, and you don't mess around. You just get the property, because if you're buying the right property, it's not just the purchase price and the condition it's in that makes you the money. It's what you can turn it into. That means unfinished attics, unfinished basements, you know, rentable space, you know, over the garage, you know, things like that. There are ways to make money by improving the value of the property with work. Okay. That's going to make money now. It's going to make money in a downturn. It's going to continue to make money. And that's money, that's time you could walk away from in a down market that won't throw your numbers out of whack. Okay. So I strongly like buying distressed properties. If you look at them carefully, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, just go buy foreclosures. And I hate to tell you, you can chase a lot of foreclosures before you get to the table with a contract, you know. And that's why there are REITs, real estate investment, real estate investment advisory groups and associations. Those are a lot of people chasing leads because you need a lot of people bird dogging in order to get those that's ones true. That you actually get to the table and pencil out. Okay. But there's not a lot enough time in this discussion, right, to have that. But even though you can make money on just appreciating the property or managing the property, I have had my successes come from having a combination of both. Okay. Oh, that's one reason why I also wanted the construction degree, is because if I buy, get into a position that I could build facilities for my startup, you know, eventually I want to build them. The general contractor makes between 5% and 20% of a project. Okay. That's a lot of money when you're talking multi-million dollar projects. Okay. Yeah. So is it worth it? Yeah, it's absolutely worth it. If you get somebody that's knowledgeable and good, you know, it can save you a ton of money, but you got to look at the project ahead of you and then figure out where can you take the money off the table. Because if you just go and buy a property and you pay too much, you pay a retail price for a wholesale property, you can buy yourself a job and you'll be working at less than minimum wage once you get done paying for all the materials, paying people to do it. Okay. And then all the profit goes into other people's pockets. You won't make a dime. And there's, I have trouble promising people they're going to make a fortune in real estate when you have prices that are being purchased on accelerator clauses, emotional buying, in my opinion, and an affordability index that is not very good right now. You had commercial real estate sold, I think it was $809 billion last year. It's a record number. And somebody told me in one of my investment meetings a while back that says, look, it's called the real estate market. That means it goes up and it goes down. If it was called the real estate make money all the time, you wouldn't put your money anywhere else. Okay. So as an investor, because my ex-wife did a startup where she took it from zero to a $1.4 billion company. She did all the numbers on it and she did a great job. I've seen behind the curtain how people form corporations, right? Pitch them on their road shows and get accredited investors and institutional investors at the table. It's a very long term. It's a process. Okay.
Yeah.
It's a team process. It's a team building process, and it's important. That said, there's as much luck involved in making a lot of money as there is hard work. I know people don't want to hear that, but that startup went from zero to $1.4 billion, and a storm in Iowa caused them to go and get corn futures, which they were doing what they thought to protect shareholder values. And those corn futures, when the prices came out higher, you know, or lower than they expected, then they had to cover the differences. So real estate is no different than in this case, ethanol company, you know, where you have to basically predict the future. And as an investor, I have been an accredited investor. I've been an active agent. You know, I've been an owner of my own apartment buildings, and I've actually worked on construction projects and stuff like that. I can tell you, I don't have a perfect crystal ball. Mine's as cracked as anybody's. If something comes into your life, like a divorce, which throws your numbers upside down, right? You will lose. I have a very good friend of mine that lost 100 employee contractor business because he got a divorce. Because the wife took the value of the company out. And once he did that, all his loan to value ratios were all upside down. Okay. People don't hear that stuff when you're getting started in real estate. And I don't want to be on a podcast, right? Promising people something that is not guaranteed. And I'm speaking from a position of experience on that. So I hope that's helpful, but those are the thoughts that come to mind when you ask these questions about how do you make money? Well, you improve it, okay? You buy it right, you improve it, you change it, you know, not just improve the condition of it, but you change the use of it, you improve the numbers, and you rely on a market that you have zero control over, okay? Yeah. And you have people that you work with and candidly tenants that are in that mix that matter, okay? They matter hugely. To have it be that we focus so much on stakeholders of shareholder value and stuff like that, and we don't consider tenants and employees as stakeholders in this process is crazy making, okay? Because yeah, they're absolutely important, okay? They're critical. So I've always made my properties and I've done my businesses so that I would spend my money on them. I am self-funding my project. When I get it built, I hope to be able to offer it to people for cheap or free because I feel that that's where the value is. When we can renegotiate things and they get more and more value, yeah, I'll make more money, okay? But it has to be renegotiated as a thing of value for that other person, okay? And I never, ever want to forget how important it is to have people that are clients, you know, tenants, employees, and people that actually are bringing money to whatever you're doing, because it's so important. So,
no, it's very important, and I agree with you. Everything has a pros and cons. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you don't mind, I'm just want to go through real estate investment benefit, the benefit of real estate investment with my viewers. So one is the rental property. It gives the real estate investor the chance to purchase a real rental property and able to recoup some money from rental income. And then the income are for those who are taking loans to purchase the properties. And then next one would be understanding the market, which is very important. Like you mentioned, it's in order to predict, right, we have to understand the market very well. There's a long-term security. So owning a rental property can afford investors a sense of security because of the property's appreciation in value over time. There's the tax benefit where government offers tax breaks for property depreciation, insurance, maintenance, repairs, travel expenses, legal fees, and property taxes. And a couple more benefits such as the real estate appreciation, that includes the appreciation of capital assets over time. Property value will be way more than 30 years from now. Another one would be that investing in real estate is a hedge against inflation. So with higher inflation, the more the rental income and the property value. And also the last I want to say that you are being your own boss. You can make your own decision. So that's where, and you already explained it, and I want to thank you for that. You have to be careful about making your decisions, right? Because since you're your own boss. Can you, Blair, can you explain it with figures and examples or analytics?
We talked about that. I think that analytics are important. I mean, more and more people are starting to use analytics, especially your payments and things like that to see when you're getting paid on time and who your good tenants are. You can start to use some numbers to start to kind of look at those things. I think that moving towards by using computers to be able to track what we do, when we do it, who we tell and how, we can start to use analytics in any business. Okay. And I think that that's going to grow. Okay. A lot. Cause we have in our pockets a tool that allows us to track something. For instance, accounting, right, is a counting of what money you have. Okay,
that's true. Yeah.
So it is the metric that we typically used as the bottom line. That said, it is not by any stretch of the imagination a total inventory of what needs to be done in order to have any business be successful. So I think that by getting so that we can start tracking the actions that matter and then monetizing those on a microfinance basis, we're going to get better clarity of what numbers are important. Now, in real estate, you know, as a real estate salesperson, I have to track how much I spend on advertising, how much my return on investment is for the advertising I do with the clients that I have. I have to start tracking as a business owner, how much do I spend on advertising versus, say, giving a discount. Like I used to give people a discount, friends of friends discount for their rent.
Really, yeah.
And I had great referrals. I never spent money on advertising because I always rented to friends of friends. And I gave them a slight discount and a $50 thank you to the person that gave the referral. Now, what did I get? I got tenants that liked each other, right? Yeah, tenants that took care of my place because I had good tenants to begin with, right? And they were vested in what was happening, and I saved a lot of money. So those are some things you can look at, is like how much money you spend on advertising, or can you decrease your rent a little bit to get up, not spend money on advertising. Those are ways to do it. Can you look at, boy, you were talking about digital marketing yesterday. Can you look at money to reach out to other markets to be able to bring in leads for doing lead gen for buying other properties? If you have money that you're looking to invest, you know, going after pre-foreclosures and things like that is a great game. It's just can be labor intensive. But how much time and money do you spend on that to get somebody to the table where you can actually get a signed contract? Because my experience on that is it's not a very predictive, right, space, because you can spend a lot of time but get a tremendous payback, or you can actually have some things that you don't spend much time on at all that also give you a very reasonable return. So you know, if your sponsor is a commercial real estate company, you know, they may have more metrics for their sectors. Like I had a slide I was going to show you if we got into the numbers, which was talking about the national property type cycle based on locations. And maybe we'll do it in another show where I put together kind of presentation from a commercial real estate standpoint.
We can have a separate podcast or a separate talking mistake.
Sure. Yeah, because there's a life cycle that goes into building a property. You got to build it. There takes a lot of money up front. You've got the hard cost of the land. Mm-hmm. You've got your surveying. You've got your zoning. You've got any negotiations. You got your legal work. You know, and then you start spending some money, and then you build the property, right? And then you get taxed on the returns and all this stuff, and then you get it where it's depreciating, right? Because it's being used and lived in and depreciation, then you got to spend more money to actually re-up the value of the maintenance and things like that. So there's a life cycle of any business, and what metrics you measure depends on where you're at in that cycle. Okay. Yeah. Like on my startup, I'm trying to figure out what analytics I could use to help figure out whether or not people are getting sober or not. That's just a market I feel very strongly about, because I feel that if I can get people that are new in recovery to be using a tool like this to help them, then it was worth every penny just getting it built. Now, if I see it growing, right, and I see it being adopted in other sectors, right, then I know I'm onto something with the technology and how I've built it. Okay. And there are lots of analytics you can do based on what industry you're in. Okay. You did a great job of talking about that earlier, about the benefits of tax benefits and things like that in real estate. There are those in other fields too, you can write off. So what analytics you use are going to be specific to you and your business. Right now, I'm just trying to get my MVP built and get what I have patented realized. So,
okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And good luck with the Sober Screen. Is that
Sober Screen? Right, Sober Screen and Sober Stepper. The software is Sober Stepper. It's for taking steps and accountability.
Is that how you spell it, though, by the way?
Yeah, Sober Screen, one word. Sober Screen.
Perfect. I do have a question for you about the passive income, but before I do that, I just want to share this with you. So depending on the location, you could be earning significant account to cover your expenses, and you can make extra money on the side. I want to know, how do you make passive income from investing in real estate?
Well, we've talked yesterday a little bit about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And in it, he talks about assets versus liabilities. And then there's, you know, I forget what it's like, earning income, you know, and then you got to have revenues, you know, and then interest, you know, that you're making on your money. But it's like the money that you, like, for instance, on my apartment buildings, I buy it and then I am charging rent. Now, out of that rent, I've got to take care of the bank note first, okay, because it's not all my money that's in the building. Yeah. Then I got to take care of my insurance to make sure that if it burns down, we got covered. We got to take care of your maintenance and your utilities and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So to get passive income, you've got to get past those expenses, right? That's and true. Then you got to get that money and bring it into you in a way that either is, you got to consider how you're going to bring it in. Do you then have an account for that property? Like, is that property set up as an LLC? Because then you might want to be setting it aside, right, as a rainy day fund for that LLC. Because an LLC is just a shell, you know, to provide protection for you, right? But you can set that up, and the passive income that you're getting could go into a rainy fund first. Why? Because then you're not taking it as income, right? Because anytime you take it out of the LLC and you declare it as income, if you're transferring it into a corporation, another shell, you've got to decide how much of that is truly income and how much is dividends, right? Because that's going to affect your FICA. That's going to affect your taxable rates on the other side, right?
Yeah.
So how you structure it's going to depend on how much you get that passive income. But you have to first pay your basic bills. And I've had people tell me, well, I make over $100 over my basic bills, right? And yeah. So it cash flows. And I have a hard time with that because, man, round numbers is one guy told me it was about 20% he figures for you know, burn rate of revenue of utilities and stuff like that. And when I've looked at my numbers in the past, it's in that range all day long. It's not like it's free to have a property once you pay the mortgage. You have to still have money set aside for the insurance, the utilities, and all that stuff. The water, trash, all that stuff comes out of your bottom line. But once you get that money above that, like for instance, on my properties, I almost doubled my rents. Okay.
Wow.
And I know people are just going to, some people will hate me even saying it, but I bought distressed properties. I redid all the hardwood floors. I rewired them, right? I shifted the central heating to electric baseboard heat. Why? Because it was cheap in that area. I had to look at that. Okay. And then it gave them more control over their heat. Okay. Which then allowed me to step out. And then I spent money on the cosmetics. Okay. I made an old building, you know, fixed it up, fixed the holes, fixed the floors, you know, resurfaced everything. And then I got it so that I doubled the rent. You know, I went from $500, well, not double, but what, 40%? Because I went from $500 per month to $800 per month. Okay. Wow. But I did that by making it a different space. Did that by making it much more attractive, you know, to the people. And then, so your cash flow is going to also depend on how much money you put into it, if you're changing the look and feel of it, okay, or time. Mm-hmm. And you got to pay yourself for it. So when people talk about easy passive income, I'm like, man, it took a lot of work to get it so I could, you know, add that to the rent, okay? And you don't just get it out in a paycheck, right? You get it out with increased rents. So it's difficult for me, with my experience, to sit there and just hand somebody and say, hey, just buy a building and just let it raise the rent a little bit if you think it's under market. That could create passive income. But make sure that you have enough set aside so that you're paying not just the mortgage, but the insurance, the taxes, the utilities, and set some money aside for that property because you can need it. Things get broken, especially in crummy old buildings like I've purchased in the past. Boilers are not cheap. You know, rewiring buildings is not cheap. The first building that I did, I actually paid somebody $26,000 to rewire it. The next one, I hired guys for day labor, right? And then hired a master electrician to make the connections. And since they didn't do any wiring, they didn't do the connections. We just pulled wire, right? Then I was able to do it for, I think, like $6,000 or $8,000 versus $26,000, right? So did I make the difference on that on passive income? No. But did I put that value into a property that I raised the rents, you know, to again, I almost doubled the rents again. Yeah, I did. I almost doubled the rents again. And I stepped away from having centralized heat to electric heat, which shifted that to the tenants. And they were happy because the building looked great, you know? So, and compared to the other buildings in the market, my buildings were in great locations and they were cool. So whatever.
Wow.
I don't know if that answers your question, but passive income is a little bit of a, of a, of a carrot to get people to say, oh, I just want to live passively. When you're managing your own properties, it's not passive. You still have to pick up the checks or have them deposited or chase down the people that didn't pay or get rid of them. That's not passive. That's work. Remodeling the building is not passive. It's actual work. You know, owning the building, you know, once it's cash flowing is great, but you still got to stay on it with the maintenance and the snow removal and things like that. So I hope that's helpful, but that's my answer.
Yeah, like there's a lot of work behind it. So yeah. It's like everything's not passive, but thank you so much for still sharing that. I mean, I hope it will be helpful for the viewers.
I hope so too. Yeah.
And going back to Sober Screen, are you working on any projects? Because you did mention that you want to combine real estate with technology. So, like, are you working on any other new projects?
My hands are full just because learning. I've been trying to learn how to program in Flutter and full stack development because I realized what I didn't realize. I'd hired two developers to build an MVP. Yeah. But what they gave me in Boston, you know, was not a functioning minimum viable product. It wasn't viable. I'd show what was given to me.
Yeah.
And it wasn't viable. So I'm having to take the pieces that were built for me and try and get them so that they work and are more functional and present, because I could tell you that it's what's behind the curtain is important, right? And that the plumbing that has to go in to build any app is critical. And yet I've had two different companies take a run at it, and getting it built for less, for the money that I've had available, I'm trying to figure out how to take the programming that was done and debug it and get a working prototype myself. Once I do that, I really want to pitch people why I think that having houses that have more rooms instead of like a two bedroom place with only two actually, one occupied, or a three bedroom place with two occupied, one as an office. Why not rent each room and they actually have five rooms in that space? You can do rooms for rent, you know, and make $500 to $700 all day. Right. And if you have a manageable space, your cash flow is going to be far better than what people are renting a single family house out for right now. And during the Depression, right, people did a lot of what they call them, boarding houses. That's what this is. So I'm trying to figure out a way to use tech to manage it so that you work together to rent that space and make it livable. If I can do that in a way that I feel that I would do, right, then I will sell it. I'll share it. It's not selling. It's sharing. If you do
share.
It right,
you believe. Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. And, sir, we're almost near the end. I have one last question for you. Let's say if I were to get into a real estate investment, what advice would you have for me? And you should like, we all know that the market is saturated with real estate agents. I believe it's the same thing in, because it is in Canada, that's for sure. But is it the same in United States? Is that correct?
There's a lot of real estate agents. There's a lot of people that want to be real estate agents. There are not a lot of, not as many that have experience being in the trenches. Okay.
That's true.
So signing a piece of paper is easy to do. Understanding whether or not that's a great idea to do and actually counseling people on how to do it in the market as it is, right? Mm-hmm. That takes time and experience. So I would encourage people though to learn, because like I sold my first house. I bought my first house with a real estate agent. Then I saw a duplex that I wanted. So I'd say get into whatever you can get into. Okay. And in my first house, I bought it and then I remodeled the basement and I put in a mother-in-law apartment because there was a canning kitchen that I turned into a working kitchen. And then I put a bathroom, a full bathroom down there. Okay. Cause there was plumbing for it. And I just made it happen. I rented that for half, more than half my rent. And I got started. Okay. Then I rented rooms. Okay. I rented a room upstairs. I was living there for $200 a month. Okay. You know, like it was a deal. When you look at the tax rebate that I got for owning it, I was living there for almost $75 a month. Okay. You got to get started, right? And then I looked at a house that was for sale by owner, and I did my own comps, and I did a spreadsheet where I did the valuations, and I looked at the cash flow of it, and I offered her far less than she was asking, but I had reasons why I thought it was worth less, okay? If you want to be an investor, get used to offering people less if you want to make money. If you want to just make people feel good, offer them what they're asking, okay? But if you want to make money, you're going to have to figure out how much it's going to cost you, okay? So learn those things, learn those, get those abilities by doing. Okay. Then spend time at real estate investment groups. Okay. Don't spend a lot of money on coaching, because honestly, the best thing you could do is go to those meetings and be exposed to what they're doing. Okay. And then try and go down to the county offices, right? And go digging through the records and find out how many people don't return your calls, right? Right. And don't actually want to foreclose on their house. So pre-foreclosures are a great way to make money, but you're going to go through the grind, right? You might get lucky and get a couple real quick hits, but they're unusual. And that's why people that make money in real estate have these big groups for people to bird dog for them. Okay. Yeah. There's reasons why people with hard money are called hard money. They have to sometimes take the property back from somebody that was bright-eyed, bushy-tailed and found a potentially good deal, but might be getting underwater in it. Okay. It's called hard money because it's hard-earned money on both sides of that contract. Okay. Wow. You have to learn that by kind of being around people that are doing it. I really recommend people get involved with those things. Read books. You know, read Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It's a great start, but it's also things like Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He was making, I think I was told, $7,000 a month on passive income when he started that thing. He's made far more money telling people how to do something than he did initially doing it, okay? As a realist, I was making well over that with my apartments when I was doing them, okay? But it's still not like you're netting that money. Those are gross numbers. Any business owner will tell you, right? It's not free, okay?
No.
So I hope that's helpful. I say get started, get together with people that are interested in helping other people kind of come up, you know, learn as you go and learn by doing. That's my strong recommendation.
Thank you so much, sir, for the recommendation, the advice, your insight and your knowledge. That was very helpful, and I hope it is helpful to all my viewers. And I would love to have you on Talking Biztech again. Thank you so much and have a wonderful day. I'm just going to turn off your screen. But you can just stay there. I'll get back to you.
Right on. I hope it's helpful.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much, sir. Once again. So, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Do not forget to subscribe and hit the notification bell for more podcasts like this. I do Talking Biztech podcast every month. Thank you so much once again and have a wonderful day. Bye.